Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Even as family incomes have been essentially flat over the past 30 years, college costs have grown higher and higher and higher and higher. They have gone up faster than housing, gone up faster than transportation. They've even gone up faster than health care costs, and that's saying something.
That's President Obama. I'm Mike Pesca, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. College is way more expensive than it used to be. Budget cuts have forced states to severely cut aid at public universities, causing tuition to skyrocket. So with the cost of college rising faster than inflation and fewer scholarships for the neediest students, how will the makeup of the student body change? A brand new crop of college students has started this month, so we're doing a month-long series on the freshman class and new economic and social climate that they face. Joining us each Thursday in September at this time is Tamar Lewin, who covers higher education for the New York Times. And today's topic, the ever-rising cost of going to college. Tamar, welcome back to WNYC, and thanks for being with us again.
Thank you.
So let's get right at it. The cost of college rising faster than inflation, even faster than healthcare, as the president says. Why?
Well, that, of course, depends on who you ask, and it's a hard one to untangle. The colleges, a lot of it comes down to having a whole lot more administrative people per kid and having a whole lot more needs for things like computers. But then there's also a lot of people saying, no, what's really going on here is this kind of arms race to have the more beautiful campus and to have the fantastic climbing wall and the beautiful, beautiful dorms so that you can get the kids from the 120 miles away by saying, oh, look at our gorgeous campus. It's hard to figure out how much is which, and that's mostly in the private selective colleges. What's going on in the state universities is a whole different thing, which is they don't have anywhere really to go except higher tuition if the state cuts back on how much money they'll give them. And in this economic climate, almost everywhere the state has been cutting back how much money they give. So they're doing a whole different set of things, like taking a whole lot more kids from out of state, which makes some in-state people pretty unhappy because they're paying the taxes and now they want the out-of-state kids who pay about triple tuition, and that tuition has risen as a class the fastest, the four-year public universities.
Give me a tangible, either take a university system or a big state, New York, California. How much has it risen, either in percent or dollars?
Well, if you look from 82 to 07, tuition and fees quadrupled. Generally, family income went up like 150%, and the CPI kind of doubled. But the classes, we have such a differentiated higher education system, so community colleges are still really quite cheap, generally around $3,000 a year, which you can probably get enough aid to cover. The private, not-for-profit schools can be easily $250,000 for a four-year degree. The in-state schools tend to be about $8,000 a year, and for out-of-state kids, that might be $18,000 or $20,000.
Is it the case that a lot of the private colleges, non-for-profit, don't really care that much if they raise tuition? They feel that they'll try to cover the need with aid?
They do, to some extent. It's just galling to people. Whenever you write about this, there are hundreds and hundreds of outraged comments called, how long can this go on? When will they say enough? You know, $250,000 for 4 years, that's ridiculous. And it's true that it's ridiculous, and it's true that that is really the sticker price, and lots of people at the particularly schools with big endowments are getting aid. But one of the things that seems quite unfair to lots of education experts is it used to be that public universities were considered kind of the good, cheap way and to get an education in your state. And nobody thought much about who would need scholarships there because it wasn't going to be that expensive.
Right.
But now it's pretty expensive. And they're still giving most of their scholarship money not based on need. They're giving what they call merit aid for about two-thirds of what they give out. And that's to attract the athletes they want, the cellists they want, the whatever they're trying to get. And people, lots of them, are saying, well, now that this is a significant cost, why isn't this state money going to people who need it, not to to choose a few outside people?
Well, merit aid versus need aid is a perennial debate, and in fact, one that we're going to invite people to join in on at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment on the show page at WNYC.org. And the question, at least how I'll frame it, is, of course, need aid is based on need. Is merit aid, though, all bad? A cellist or an athlete, maybe we have less of a sympathy for, you know, some huge Pac-10 university who needs a tailback. But what about merit aid for the smart kid who's maybe middle class, who the formula says, you know, they're not going to really get that much they're not going to get that much need aid. So let's give him some merit aid. He's a smart kid. We want him in our school. He helps the school overall. Is that such a bad thing? What do you think, Tamar?
I think there are some arguments for merit aid. I think at a public university, it's just a little harder to make that argument. And the public universities all say, no, we have to get that to get the classes we want. And the more fabulous outside kids who have particular unique talents we get, the more of the best in-state kids we'll get, too. It's part of how we build our class to make it attractive.
Do you know any, do you have any idea about the breakdown of how much of the merit aid goes strictly for academics and how much goes for a special need, like cellists or athletes?
It depends completely on the school. I don't think there's any average numbers. And the other thing they would say in their defense is if they're giving it out to athletes regardless of need, it may also be that some of those people are really quite low income and do have the need. It's just not classified that way. So it may not be as unfairly skewed to rich kids as it looks.
Right.
But when you have, which we do have, some big state flagship universities who want to get higher on all the ranking lists and have more national merit scholars, and they will guarantee national merit scholars from all over the country lots and lots of money to come to their state, that really is a pretty big expenditure that is going to leave the kids from in-state with less money.
Right, and I guess the argument goes, and I've seen this put forth, that it increases the reputation of the school, it helps all graduates. Once our public university jumps up those U.S. news and ranking lists, once we start an honors program, and it's well known that we're a top-flight public university, it's better for everyone, they would say.
They would, but then you say, but what about the poor kids in your state? Isn't that who you have your biggest obligation to? And what's the answer there? You know, who knows?
The answer there, yeah, but we came in second in the national championship game. this is Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer speaking with Tamar Lewin of the New York Times. We're doing this monthly series on the freshman class. So we've been talking about public colleges, and another way the public colleges get money is that there's maybe a little bit of an arms race attracting out-of-state students. So if their charter is to educate the children of their state, well, it's very profitable for the University of Michigan to attract kids across the border from Wisconsin and the University of Wisconsin to attract kids from across the border of Michigan. Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is, for example, California has been the most budget-stressed university system, and it was always the one that everybody thought was just the very, very, very best. But they've been in terrible, terrible financial situation, and they said, okay, so we're going to increase our number of out-of-state kids in Berkeley. You know, it might be 20% now. That's a big percentage. That's a lot of California kids who aren't going to get to go to Berkeley. And it really does change the nature of the university. And they would say, well, this is great. This is a geographic diversity. And anyway, we've got to do it. But you get now different ranks of these public universities, the ones that are a little bit public-private, and UVA might be one, Michigan might be one, and now Berkeley might be one, where there's very many out-of-state kids, and they're there partly because you want them, but partly because they pay so much more. And is that still a state flagship university? You know, who knows?
Yeah, what does someone who's living in Roanoke paying taxes in-state for the children of Virginia to go to a top-flight university if, you know, only 60% of kids or 50% at UVA are actual Virginians?
And then you get UVM, the University of Vermont, where it's largely out of state, and they say, well, we're very little state, and we have to do this. But that's quite a different feel. That's mostly out of state people.
Right. Everyone there so they could go skiing during November. We've got a couple of dueling comments here on the need versus merit aid debate. Kathina on Facebook says, I think it should be more need-based. I think folks with the merit will always be able to get the funds, but not so with the need. Whereas Christina on Facebook says, merit satisfied first, then need for each individual. So many of us cannot go to college today without some financial assistance. People who need to go to college often do not merit it. Could this be why the USA is falling behind educational quality? As to the first point, can we just say, look, if you're a national merit scholar, and that's who we were talking about, a very, you know, high achieving high school student who would get merit aid, can they usually find the funds? All those high achieving kids find the funds to go to college? Can we assume that?
Well, unfortunately, we have a lot of overlap between the high achieving and the high income kids, and most of them will be able to find some aid. It may not be at the school they want, but of course, the very most selective schools, the Ivies, they've gone no loan. We'll cover your full need. Don't you worry about it. So yeah, the real high achievers, the superstars, they're going to be able to do very, very well.
We're speaking with Tamar Lewin of the New York Times. I'm Mike Pesca in for Brian Lehrer. So if we talk about aid, we have to talk about loans. The statistic I have before me is that students owe 25% more than 5 years ago. Let's talk a little bit about the cost of student loans. Are the costs of the loans rising? Are the deals that are available now not as good as they used to be?
Well, people are borrowing more because it costs more and their family incomes haven't gone up as much. And there's a lot of people who don't understand the landscape of this very well. If you borrow under the federal lending programs, there really are pretty many protections. For example, there's income-based repayment, so if you don't make a lot of money, you aren't going to have to pay back a lot of money right away. There's some forbearance. There's all kinds of ways to help make it reasonable. And yet, lots and lots of people are still going out and taking out private loans that don't have any of that protection, which is just not a smart way to go. But Student loans, you know, can be with you your whole life. They're one of the few things that are not dischargeable in bankruptcy, and they follow you around. And if you're taking out $40,000 in loans and getting an education that may be a wonderful education but isn't going to let you make very much money, you're really going to be in a bad place.
Let's take a call from Dan in Bridgewater, who I think is taking a step back, questioning everything we're talking about. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, you know, in Europe, by the time you finish high school, you've had a thorough education, and you go to professional school. Here, college is 4 years trying to make up for 12 lost years of education. I've taught in college, and I tell you, a lot of people come to college and not prepared, and they're going to invest all this money into what? Because a college education is really not preparing you for a job that will pay for all the money you spent there. In college, so whether it's state or whether it's private school, it's really disgusting how American kids are screwed over after they finish high school. The second thing is, most of these schools, if you go at Rutgers, if you don't speak Chinese, you're lost, because everybody there is a Chinese research coolie brought over there by from sister universities in China, and New Jersey citizens can't get into graduate program without paying an arm and a leg.
All right.
This is so unfair.
Dan, let's just thank you for the call. And I wanted to ask you, Tamar, what about, you know, every study says that it's so helpful in lifelong earnings to go to college. Is that just because of the value of the diploma? Or is it because of what you actually learn in college?
Well, there's a couple different things going on, and we always keep talking about the access to college, but we have a real problem in this country that we don't have much in the way of completion rates. So people go to college, but they end up with the debt. They take on the debt, but they don't come out with a degree. So the idea that you're going to go to college and you're going to get your degree in 4 years, that's not the common path anymore. So I agree with some of what that caller was saying. American kids are getting screwed over in taking lots and lots of debt and probably not getting through all that quickly in most cases. And that does have to do with what they had in the way of preparation, and are they going to need remedial courses, and if so, how long is this going to take them, and are they going to be able to wait it out and stick it out and hang in there till they get the degree. I think, you know, of course it depends on what field you're going to. A college degree now is not worth more than a high school degree used to be, but you still need it.
A college degree now in 2010 is not worth more than the high school degree of 1960?
No, I'd probably have to go back further than that. But I don't have a date.
Yeah.
But it used to be that what you needed to get ahead in the workforce was just graduating from high school. And now the basic bachelor degree is kind of your baseline degree. And to really do well, you probably need some graduate education, unless you're going into one of the vocational fields that we probably aren't stressing enough as a country.
Right. And, you know, I recently saw Obama economics advisor Christina Romer on a talk show saying that we speak of the economy. Do you know people with college educations? There's only 4% unemployment among them. It's been really disproportionate what down the people that are affected by down economic times, just to underline the importance of what you're just saying about the importance of a degree.
Yeah, but it is a big problem how many people start college or start community college and don't make it all the way through to the degree, but have taken on the debt and have kind of fallen by the wayside somewhere.
Yeah, and the Washington Monthly had a great, huge story about how we care about kids failing out of high school, but the issue of kids failing out of college is all but unaddressed. I mean, I'd never really considered it. They had some great stats in there. I don't know if you saw that article,
yeah.
But it is a huge... Yeah, it's a huge problem.
So we don't even talk about 4-year completion rates anymore. We all talk about 6-year completion rates, and that's a big difference.
Right, right, right. And so, I mean, I don't know if they'll ever get any, you know, political heft behind, let's look at some of the worst performing colleges, because at least what the Washington Post was writing about, there are some that probably, if we're talking about shutting down high schools, some of these colleges should probably be shut down. They're failing so many students.
Right. There is a lot of new attention going into the completion idea now, though. There's a lot of foundations looking at it. There's a lot of new programs trying to figure out how to get people through. There's even a brand new one that is, let's find all the people who filled all their requirements but somehow didn't get the degree because they owed $80 to the library, or they didn't get the transcript from the previous college sent, and let's just say, hey, you have all your credits, finish this stuff up, and we'll hand it out to you. And now let's find all the people who are only 3 credits short, and let's say, hey, you're only 3 credits short, come on back. I don't know if this is real, and it makes you wonder whether the degree is worth anything as the degree, because if you learned what you needed to learn to get the degree, why wasn't that good enough?
Yeah. Well, this is just part of our ongoing debate, the freshman class, and Tamar Lewin covers higher education for the New York Times. Thank you, Tamar, for joining us again.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you know this and it's in your calendar, but from what I understand, you'll be back again next Thursday. Coming up, the Democratic candidates for Brooklyn's 10th congressional district, the longtime incumbent Ed Towns and his longtime or at least multi-time challenger Kevin Powell. An interesting guy who is both an alumni of the real world and a poet. Stay with us on The Brian Lehrer Show, back in just a little while.